The Fraternity, Imperator Claudio Matsuko, FRC.
4 years have already gone by since our 2019 World Convention in Rome. Time, as the saying goes, flies. I must tell you that I've been looking forward to this Montreal Convention because there is no doubt that these are truly extraordinary circumstances, moments when we can feel the egregore of the Order manifest itself and produce moments of happiness. Deep down, we all live to enjoy these special moments, which we define as instants of joy, where a unique condition is created in the mind, a state that we would like to make permanent, as it generates so much good within us. The Rosicrucian philosopher Baruch Spinoza called this feeling joy, and defined it as a state of increased power of being, which takes the mind to a state of higher perfection. As Rosicrucians, we are aware that this is the result of the degree of attunement with the cosmic that each of us is able to achieve in our lives. So the greater and deeper the perception we have of the universal natural order, which we call cosmic consciousness, the greater and longer lasting will this state of happiness be. The perception of this cosmic order produces a deep sense of peace and gives greater meaning to life, two elements that are becoming every day more rare in today's societies. Since the theme of this convention is fraternity, I would like to reflect with you on this word, on its meaning today, and the conditions for building it, and on its significance within AMWORK. I would most particularly like us to consider some of the misunderstandings that exist on this topic, because we often live on illusions, which are treacherous because sooner or later they reveal themselves for what they really are. Vanishing images, dreams, nothing more, and then disappointment sets in. Everything disappears like the beautiful mandalas drawn by the Tibetan monks, drawings of great complexity, albeit swept away with a quick gesture of the hand. All that remains is just meaningless sand of different colors, leaving those who witness that gesture with a feeling of bewilderment and sadness. We are members of an order that aims to develop in each of us a mature spirituality, not infantile nor naive, that gives emphasis upon different aspects of human nature so that we may transform them into their best, brightest, and highest aspects. Let us begin, then, by stating that fraternity consists in understanding that everything in nature is structured by aggregation, since nature aggregates individual components in order to build structures of increasing complexity. We can see this both in the formation of matter, where subatomic elements such as electrons, protons, and neutrons assemble to form atoms. Then atoms come together to form molecules, and molecules themselves aggregate to shape increasingly complex structures. The same is true in living systems, where atoms form specific molecules, such as amino acids and proteins, which then combine to form the cell. Cells then aggregate to form tissues, organs, and eventually all living things on the planet, including us humans. All these aggregations are the visible expression of the action of cosmic consciousness. We are therefore the result of aggregation and, we could say, of some sort of fraternity between cells, which work together for the benefit of the whole. And in the case of a living being, the good relationship between the cells results in what we call health, while the good relationship between humans can be called fraternity. We know, however, that the body can become sick to the extent that the condition called harmony is lost. Thus, even human aggregations can break down into disharmony, which in the worst cases can degenerate into a state of war. As Rosicrucians, we know that we are not immune to this loss of harmony, be it internal, individual, or collective. Then disappointment can set in, because we believed we were part of a well-established, well-functioning fraternity, made of advanced and enlightened minds, when instead we see that this is not the case. This is, in my opinion, due to the fact that we often take fraternity for granted, while it is rather a perspective, an ideal towards which we must strive. It is a condition that the members of a community must build, not something that descends from above, a value that must guide each of us along the path, like a beacon in the night, or, more appropriately, we could say, a utopia. Yes, fraters and sorers, fraternity is a utopia towards which we journey, and every step must be protected and cared for. The word utopia has had several connotations throughout history. It is now good to clarify its meaning in order to avoid misunderstandings. The most common today is that of a childish dream that cannot be realized. The word derives from ancient Greek and means non-place, a place that does not exist. But we who follow a mystical path know that this promised land, this ideal place, does not exist on a map, but is part of the human heart. The island of Utopia exists in the human heart, and the journey that leads to it is an inner journey. To speak of fraternity, therefore, is to speak of responsibility, of a desire to build, to strive towards a utopia. To build fraternity, we must be inspired by nature and its laws, because all the aggregations that we can find in the natural world comply with laws. Aggregations and relationships are not random. They are the result of well-defined processes. Laws or rules are needed to regulate the associations and relationships between the different components of a system. For example, in chemistry, atoms combine according to what is called valence. Chemical reactions occur according to the laws of thermodynamics. Molecules can combine according to specific electronic affinities, cells according to the program of their DNA, and human beings according to a specific mental disposition that translates into definite actions and behaviors. In our case, that is, in the case of human communities, the process that regulates relationships is called ethics. Since it is not possible for an individual to evolve, but only for groups, systems, and communities, ethics becomes a necessary component of the existence of any human group. We grow and evolve through relationships, and relationships require rules. Let us now look at what we mean by the word ethics, in particular, Rosicrucian ethics, and let us begin by citing an interesting study conducted by Oxford University anthropologist Oliver Scott Currie, who, with his team, developed a study program where they evaluated 60 cultures on our planet to identify ethical behavior. The findings revealed 7 rules common to all these groups, namely, 1. Help your family. 2. Help your group. 3. Return favors received. 4. Be brave. 5. Obey your superiors. 6. Share resources fairly. 7. Respect the property of others. These are the basic rules common to the 60 groups studied in many parts of the world. Similar rules can be found among indigenous peoples in different eras and geographical areas. They are generally unwritten, but deeply internalized by the community. So it is not necessary to impose these rules through coercion upon the members of those communities, because they freely understand that it is this behavior that best meets the needs of all, that most promotes aggregation. In our specific case, as Rosicrucians, we form an initiatic community, and as such, we have specific ethics that are necessary for the survival of our group. Many of our rules are unwritten because they correspond to a common feeling among our members. For instance, not one of us would ever consider eating a sandwich during a convocation or check our cell phone while participating in a ritual, would they? We feel deeply, not that this is something we cannot do, but rather we should not do it. that a voice within us forbids it. However, other rules must be written to avoid misunderstandings. For example, no member should ever ask to take on a specific function in an affiliated body, as this would show an action of the ego. The appropriate attitude is to simply make oneself available for service, whatever that may be. Another written rule is that no member should proselytize within AMWORK for other fraternal organizations, as this weakens the egregore. These are written rules to avoid misunderstandings, but each member is free to accept them or not. If he does not accept them, however, it is obvious that he will not participate in the edification of our fraternity. The word ethics originated with the ancient Greek philosopher Aristotle, who was a disciple of Plato in the 4th century BCE. Aristotle composed a work entitled Nicomachean Ethics. Nicomachus was his son, and like many parents, Aristotle wanted to pass on to his son a collection of thoughts that could guide him in the pursuit of happiness. Nicomachean Ethics has become one of the fundamental texts of Western culture, one of the beacons of thought that guide human beings in their search for the ideal conditions so that they can live a life, as the ancient philosophers said, that is worth living. Many ethical rules arise, as we have said, spontaneously in the heart of human beings to the extent that they attune with the cosmic and perceive the order of nature. Here is what the German philosopher Nicholas of Cusa wrote in 1453. The commandments of the divine are few in number, known to all and common to all nations. Indeed, the light that reveals them to us is innate in the rational soul. For the divine speaks in us, commanding us not to do to others what we would not wish done to us. Love is the fulfillment of the divine law, and it is towards this very law that all other laws lead. This is ethics. As I previously said, ethics is not a set of rules to be imposed by coercion on individuals, since it requires the exercise of freedom and responsibility. Moreover, individual conduct practices can, rather must, be continually questioned because the reality around us is constantly changing. I wish, therefore, to stress once again that ethics is not a collection of rules to be imposed on individuals, but that it must be understood and internalized as the best of the solutions found at a given moment by a community for its harmonious coexistence. Let me give you an example. If it is necessary to have an undercover traffic policeman giving fines when speed limits are not respected, this is not ethics. Ethics would imply that traffic rules be respected as a free choice because they are considered useful for the community to which one belongs. Speed limits were established to ensure people's safety. I know in my heart that even if I own a car that can speed and I enjoy driving it fast, I must limit my speed because this protects the community I belong to. Thus, I do not need to be controlled by police in order to respect this rule, which is written in the highway code. I fully exercise my freedom and responsibility by accepting it. Another example is the ban on smoking in certain places. At first, these were imposed rules. Today they have become a shared ethic. This is precisely why AMWORK is keen to emphasize that we are free to join the order, and therefore to accept its ethics, and to leave it whenever we wish. There is no spiritual evolution and growth, and likewise there is no ethics without the freedom and responsibility inherent in choices. Therefore, ethical rules must be accepted because they are felt to be right at a given moment, and because they are perceived as a means to promote coexistence and cooperation. In other words, to foster the good of the group and the aggregation. We must be aware that the atmosphere we breathe is polluted not only because some people smoke, but also because some behaviors are toxic to relationships between people. During the initiation ritual, into a lodge, chapter, and pranayas, in a very solemn moment, we are invited to reflect and be vigilant against envy, hasty judgments, inconsistency, vanity, and insincerity. The ritual states that these behaviors destroy the light, that they degrade the quality of relationships between those who make up the Rosicrucian initiatic community. We may interpret them as follows. We need to cultivate appreciation, admiration, and respect instead of envy. We need to cultivate suspension of judgment by avoiding condemnations, assessments, and labels on people and their attitudes, because it is often hard to know the real cause of a person's inappropriate behavior. We must cultivate consistency, the will to follow virtuous practices, those that nourish relationships with positive energy, which is distinguished from negative, because positive energy produces happiness in the other. We must cultivate modesty, simplicity, and humility, attitudes that are perceived by all as nourishment for a positive, constructive relationship. We must cultivate sincerity, knowing that it is not a matter of being a person who always tells things as they are, but developing that sensitivity which makes us understand the appropriateness of saying or not saying something, while always and in any case adhering to the truth and the good of the person we are talking to. One of the fundamental steps in our journey is the moment when a person feels the need to move from an individual perspective, where the focus is on their own ego, to a broader perspective where one identifies goodness and justice as the values to strive for. This process has never been easy, but perhaps today, in the historical period in which we live, a period in which individualism is encouraged and narcissism seems to be the hallmark of the average human being, it seems to be even more difficult. This is why the greatest enemy of ethics, of the foundations of fraternity and aggregation, is individualism, that particular vision of self which excludes all others, that aims at the immediate satisfaction of our own needs, be they legitimate or artificial, without taking into account the needs of others. This attitude, characterized by narcissism and individualism, must, however, be considered as part of life and as normal, even though it is often inappropriate, since it is the result of a number of factors that are complex to classify, which cause a person to fail to develop their sense of ethics, in the same way that he or she may not be sensitive to good music. I define the ethical sense as being the natural sensitivity of a person to realize that a certain behavior is useful to the group, that it contributes to the general good and justice, a behavior oriented towards those values that we listed earlier, which are the foundation of good relationships. This means that the ethical sense can and must be developed, because it is inherent in human potential. Through various practices, we can acquire the understanding, the feeling, as to what actions are right and good at any given time. We can learn to sense the universal order that underlies all natural manifestations, which is a source of harmony in human relationships. In other words, we can learn to live together. The logic that presides over the idea of fraternity is therefore the same as that which presides over the order of the universe, the cosmic order that produces aggregation. This is why fraternity, rather than a condition of achievement, constitutes a process in the making, an operating mode of nature itself, a continuous path. But bear in mind, this is a process that aims at correcting imbalances rather than seeking equilibrium. Each individual has the ability to perceive this universal order, for some, for a fraction of a second and only once in their lives, for others, for longer and more frequently, for others, unfortunately, never in their lifetime. It is this perception alone that marks the difference in the evolution of individuals. This perception, as I mentioned, can be compared by analogy to the musical sense. We all have an auditory sense. We can all listen to sounds, but not all of us have a musical sense, which is a refinement of the auditory sense. Humans possess different levels of musical sense. There are musical geniuses such as Beethoven or Mozart, as well as people who are content with small, easy melodies, those that come out frequently in the summer and disappear soon after. The musical sense, just as the perception of the aggregative logic of the universe, can be learned. Learning this logic is precisely what we do in the order. It is what the initiation ritual does. In truth, all of our initiation rituals do this. I now would like to make a more specific reflection on the ethics of our order. Ours is a path that touches on the deep sensitivity of people, leading them to experience the sacred. This experience, as I have stated in other messages, is not specific to religion. Rather, it precedes religions. It is at their basis. It forms their foundation. The same is true for the Rosicrucian mystical path. Through our exercises, reflections, meditations, and processes induced by our rituals, we tend toward the perception of a presence and at the same time of belonging to something beyond ourselves, but of which we feel a part. It is an experience that deeply touches the soul, and once experienced, we never return to the way we were before. The main instrument of this mystical path is the ritual, where the initiatic community vibrates in unison, resonating with the higher dimensions of reality. During the ritual, our community silently, almost without realizing it, enters into harmony, forming a unity. The ritual changes our perception of time by slowing it down and, in doing so, helps us to see more clearly. This slowing down to learn to see is the first true lesson of spirituality. Of course, the vision I am referring to is not about good eyesight. There are many people who have good eyesight but do not see those things that are essential. Having said this, I now ask you, do you think it is necessary today to state that entering a Rosicrucian temple with a cell phone constitutes a form of desacralization? I'm not talking about video recording the ritual, but simply having your turned-on mobile phone on you, sensing its presence in your pocket when you sit down, feeling it vibrate, perhaps even thinking about peeping at it, answering the messages that are coming in. Is this fact that now seems so natural compatible with what we do in the temple? Answering this question is essential, because ethics, as I said, is an ongoing reflection on the need to adapt with new rules to the ever-changing reality around us. We would not have discussed this topic 30 years ago. To clear the air of doubt, let me tell you that the mobile phone is an excellent tool. However, we must realize that it connects us with a dimension that is not the one that seekers of truth search for when entering a Rosicrucian temple. These are different planes of reality, and if we do not become aware of this, we fall into another of the many illusions to which we are subject. The philosopher Byung Chul Han said that the cell phone has replaced the rosary, the prayer beads. In my opinion, he is right. I think that without realizing it, we're going down a road that tends to move us away from the experience of the sacred. I also think that, as Rosicrucians, we should continually reflect on which practices may bring us closer to the experience we seek, and which may lead us away from it, which attitudes strengthen our search for fraternity, and which attitudes distance us from it, not in others, but in ourselves. As a conclusion, dear fraters and dear sorors, I would like to return to a point that I consider essential, and which I have already addressed in previous messages. I repeat it here because, in truth, we do not have much new to say or write, but we do have a lot more to do, all of us together. And within this, I place at the forefront our rituals and the reflection on what they teach us. I will therefore quote the words of the classmaster in one of the early Amwork initiation rituals. Those of you who have done this initiation in a lodge will remember that at some point when you stood before the classmaster in the west of the temple, she said, "Let us meditate for a few moments on the beauty of a life well lived." When properly considered, this admonition is extremely powerful. So I urge those who have not yet done the first temple initiation, but have reached that point in their studies to do it. This is a truly initiatic admonition, which only the class master in the west of the temple could pronounce. It is the mother who says to her son, "Look at your past. Think for a moment about your future. Put your life up to this point on one plate of the scales, and on the other plate, what you would consider, at the time of your transition, to be a life well lived. Because that time will come, and then it will be too late to think about it." Now, of course, we have to define for ourselves what a life well lived consists of. And without much effort, we will soon conclude that it will be the one in which we will have created and nurtured bonds of affection with the people who will have participated in our time, in our life. For us Rosicrucians, life will have been well lived, not because of a plentiful bank account, not because of an important social position, but when the people with whom we have shared our life will say that we have been important to them. And when we understand what we are today, we also owe it to the people we have met in the course of our life, some of them who are still present, and others who are no longer there. Etymologically, to be important means to be carried within, to be carried in the hearts of people. But being important does not mean being famous. There are many famous people who are not important, and there are many people who are not famous at all, unknown to the media, but who are very important. I would like to be important to you, and I can tell you that all of you are important to me. If we can behave in a way that we be important to each other, then it will mean that we have not wasted our time, that being together has been fruitful, and that we have taken a few more steps toward our own utopia called fraternity. Solemn commitment. I will now appeal to your sensitivity and ask you to make a solemn commitment, not to me, not to the order, nor to any other authority, but to yourselves and to your master within, the only guardian and true initiator of each one of us. Take 3 neutral breaths, inhaling deeply through your nose and exhaling quietly. Intone the vowel sound OM 3 times. I now humbly ask the masters of our tradition, Frater Harvey Spencer Lewis, Frater Ralph Maxwell Lewis, and the Venerable Kutumi, to assist me in this time and be present here among us. Fraters and sorors, before you make your solemn commitment, I would like to ask you to reflect for a few moments and then decide if you intend to make a voluntary, conscious, and deliberate choice to build the utopia of fraternity. Think carefully, because what you decide here and now will remain in your karma and guide your future behavior. Take a few seconds to think about it, and to help you in your reflection, I will ask you 3 questions. Is it your will to journey towards our utopia? Do you want to be a messenger of fraternity? Is this what you want with all your heart and with all your mind? Then this is your opportunity to take a further step toward this ideal because the members at your side are here for the same purpose, and this is what they expect from you. They now represent all the people you will meet in your life and those important to you, towards whom, not being able to meet them any longer, you will nevertheless direct your steps. Now, take the hands of the members on each side and hold them firmly. The emotion your heart is experiencing in this moment generates an energy that rises from this room and embraces the entire planet. A feeling of happiness envelops you. You know that there is still much work to be done, but that you will face it with joy. Now you can say aloud, "Fraternity exists. I have experienced it." Slowly release the hands you are touching. Take a deep breath. Open your eyes. May the masters of our tradition bless our communion so that Amwork will always be a reflection of the ideal of fraternity between beings. So mote it be.